Masechet Rabbah Kama Daf Samech Zayin. We ended the previous daf with this statement of Rabbi Zera, that although he agrees that when a name changes, that is called something significant and can make an acquisition. For example, if a thief steals a piece of leather, a hide, and then he says, I'm going to use this as a tablecloth. It's now called a tablecloth. And from then on, it will be used and called a tablecloth. So that's a Shinui Hashem. That's a significant change, and therefore he acquires it thereby. That is true. We asked a question, what about a beam, right? Because a beam that when someone steals from Home Depot and puts in the ceiling, and then it's called the ceiling joist. But that one, you don't say it changes name, and therefore the thief keeps it. In fact, from the letter of the law, he has to return the beam. It's only as a rabbinic takana that they say, oh, you know what, keep the beam, because otherwise you're not going to make teshuvah, because no one wants to break down their house. So how do we resolve this contradiction? Rabbi Zera said, there's a distinction. If there's a name change that's chozer libriyato, but the name change is reversible, like in the case of a beam, once you take it out of the house, now it goes back to being just a beam. So it's called a beam, then it's called a ceiling joist, and then once you take it out, it's called a beam again. So that's not a permanent name change, and therefore that does not make an acquisition. But if it is a permanent name change, then it will in fact make an acquisition. Good. And now we're going to ask a question about that. Is it true that a permanent name change is considered a significant change in the item itself, such that now it's a new item and now the person who has it acquires it? We're going to ask a question of a braita that talks about a pipe. A water pipe. If someone takes logs, so these are just plain old logs, and then he hollows out the logs and makes it into a pipe. So first it was called logs, now it's made into a pipe. But the Braita makes an important distinction. You're making this pipe in order to bring water into a hole and create a mikveh. A mikveh has to be made of rainwater, right, that flows directly into the pit. It doesn't have to rain right into the pit. It could rain near the ground around it, and then be channeled into the pit. That's also fine. But rainwater can't be collected in a vessel. If it's collected in a vessel and poured into the mikveh, then that's no good. That's called mayim she'uvim. That's poured water. So if you want to make a pipe, you have to do it in the right way. If you take a sinor, if you take a log and you hollow out the log and make a pipe, and then you take that pipe and stick it into the ground, install it into the ground, that's no good, because when you took that log and hollowed it out, you made a vessel, and now it's called a vessel, and now you put it, even though it's resting on the ground, it's still a vessel, and the water is flowing through a vessel. That's called mayim shuvin, water that was delivered by a vessel. But so here's what's the right way to do it. If you take the log, raw log, and stick it into the ground, now it's part of the landscape, and then you hollow it out while it's on the ground, that's okay, because you didn't make a vessel. Rather, you made a channel in the ground, just like if you dig a channel in the dirt and it brings the water to the mikveh, that's good. So too, it happens to be there's some wood in the ground, and so now you're making a ground channel, not a vessel. That's the end of the braita. Here's the question. If you think that a name change is significant, then here it doesn't really matter which order you did it in, even if you put it into the ground first and then hollowed it out. Still, once you hollow it out, it's going to have a name change. Someone looks at it and says, beforehand, this is, oh, there's some logs on the ground here. Then when he comes back later, after you hollow it out, he says, oh, this is a pipe. So the fact that this is now a pipe, that changes it into a vessel. And so even if you put the log in first, since a name change is significant, now it becomes a new thing and it should still be no good. But the Braita doesn't say that. Braita says it's permitted to put it in the ground first and hollow it out, even though we'll undergo a name change. So this means a name change is not significant. And we answer, no, the law of Mayim Shuvim is completely different because it's only the Rabbanan law. This is a big chidush. On the Deoraita level, you can use poured water for a mikveh. That is fine. It'll still be kosher. Only the Rabbanan say that it has to be flowing rain water. There's a machloket among the Rishonim about how much of the mikveh. Is it the whole mikveh can be water? It can be mayim shuvin, half of it, three log, or more. Everybody agrees that you could have less than three log of mayim shuvin. There's often just some dampness around on the walls of it. So less than that would be okay. So it's machloket about how much of it, but whatever it is, the point is, let's just say all of it makes it easier to read this. So since this whole law is midrabanan, so that's why we don't have to worry about it too much. Now we hachi afilu de reshanameh. Now we say, asking, well, hold on. If the whole law of mayim shuvin is derabanan, then even in the resha of the braita, where I took the log as is, made it, hollowed it out, and then put it into the ground, that should also be kosher because who cares, right? On the doraita level, mayim shuvin is fine. So why not say if it's permitted in the sefa? Why not say in the resha also is permitted? What's the distinction? And we answer, hatamika torat keli alav betalush, hacha en torat keli alav betalush. No, in the resha, when it's disconnected from the ground, and now it has the status of a vessel, and so this will fall under the rabbinic prohibition. Although it's true, it's only the rabbanan, but still, the rabbis say it doesn't work, so therefore it's no good. It's pasul midrabanan because once you make it hollow out, while you're holding it out, not on the ground, now it's a vessel, so that's just mayim shuvim. Whereas if you put it in the ground first, so it does not have the status of a vessel. We're not going to go to such an extent for a derabanan to say that the name change, because people used to call it a log and now they call it a pipe, that that's going to effectuate a significant change. It's, even though we agree with that, when it comes to ownership of a thief or someone that finds something, then yes, a name change will agree is a significant change. But we're not going to bring that. We don't have to for a derabanan. The rabbis did not make a gezerah in such a case. The rabbi said it's sufficient. As long as you put it in the ground and you cut it in and you cut it afterwards, we could just say, it never got the status of a vessel. And the rabbis decided there not to make a gezerah just because of a name change. Okay, so we solved that problem. Now a new question. This is against the Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef said that Yeush does not make an acquisition, right? Yeush does not matter. We challenge that. Metibe. Haganav ha-gazan va-anas. Hekdeshan hekdesh u-turumatan turuma u-masrotan ma'aser. A robber in the night, or a thief during the day, or this is the extortioner, anas, what we called a chamsan before, who takes something, he pays for it, but he takes it still without permission. Any of these people who have ill-gotten goods, if they take that thing that they stole and make it hekdesh, it works. They have the power to make it hekdesh, which sounds like it's theirs. I can't go and make something that you own hekdesh, but here it says they can. And let's say they steal tebel from someone, and so then they separate teruma and they separate maaser. That is valid teruma and valid maaser. I like how we're always talking about these pious thieves. They don't care about stealing, grabbing, but teruma maaser. They even give donations to the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, very nice of them. Anyway, the point is that it seems, so how could it be possible? How could it work? How could they make something like this and make teruma? You can't take teruma from produce that's not yours. So it must be that it becomes theirs. Has become theirs if they stole it? Is it not that the original owners despaired of recovering it? They had Yeush, and through the Yeush, that transferred it to the thief. So that proves that Yeush does make an acquisition. We answer, Amre hatam ika shinui Hashem, demikara tibla vashta tiruma hekdesh, demikara cholin vashta hekdesh. No, in these cases, it doesn't transfer and work because of Yeush, but rather because of a name change. Before, when he stole it, he stole tebel. But then, once he makes a tiruma, that's a different thing altogether. Someone comes along and says, what is this? Is this tebel? Oh no, it's tiruma. So the name change is significant. It becomes a new item and he acquires it through that. Or hekdesh. Beforehand, something was called chulin, and now it's called hekdesh. That's a significant name change, and that creates an acquisition and actually belongs to the thief. So at the same time as he makes a hekdesh, he also acquires it and then makes a hekdesh. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, minayin l'shinui shehu koneh. Now Rav Chista says in the name of Yochanan. Now, how do we know that in general, a change, a physical change, in an item creates an acquisition? Shene'emar ve'eshib et ha'gezela matam odomar asher gazal im ka'en she'gazal yachzir ve'im lav damim ba'alma ba'e shalumeh. We actually saw this derivation once before, and it comes from this pasuk here. Ve'eshib et ha'gezela asher gazal, so he should return the stolen item that he stole. Well, if you once you call it a stolen item, I know he stole it. So why do you have to say asher gazal? So the answer is, we're talking about two cases. If the item still exists as it did in the same form when he stole it, then he has to return the original item. But if not, if either it's lost or gone, or if he changed it, he stole plywood and now he made a dresser out of it. So now it's not called plywood. It isn't plywood. And now it's a dresser. It's not the item as it was before. Then he only has to pay the value of what he stole. So that's how we learn it. But then we challenge this. Hi, asher gazal mibay lemaute gezel aviv. She'eno mosif chomesh al gezel aviv. Wait a second. This phrase, extra words, asher gazal, we need it for another law of a case of a father who steals something. Or denies that he owes someone money. And he dies. And now the son knows the truth that his father actually stole, but the son decides to deny it and swear falsely about it. In the end, he comes and admits, oh, I swore falsely about that. So the son from the inheritance will have to pay back the original amount, but does not have to pay a fifth for what his father stole, right? The fine only applies to the person who himself stole and lies about it and vows, but not if someone else vows on his behalf. And how do we know that? Asher gazal. You only have to, you only get this penalty if gezela asher gazal. Right back in the pasuk. Ketav Hashem ve'eshib et gezela asher gazal. He has to return the item that he stole. Only if he stole it, but the son himself didn't steal it. So therefore, I mean, it's not permitted for the son to lie, obviously, and certainly not to swear falsely, but this penalty does not apply to the son. So I already have using this asher gazal for another purpose. How can I use it for the law of shinui, that shinui is koneh? Im ken, nichtob rachamana ve'shibet gezelo. So we answer, no, if the Torah only wanted to teach the law of the father and son, that the son doesn't have to pay the fifth, the Torah could have written Heshibet Gezelo. He has to return his stolen item, and that would mean the item that he himself stole. Then he pays a fifth, otherwise not. So it could have taught that in a simpler way. The fact that it goes instead of Gezelo, it says Et HaGezela Asher Gazal. So that's a lot longer form. Longer than necessary to teach one law. So it must be it's using this even longer form to teach me two laws. Shema mina tarte. So we learn number one that a son does not have to pay a fifth if he lies on behalf of his father, and his father is the one that stole. And second, we learn that if the item is not in the same form as it is when it was stolen, then he doesn't have to pay return that actual mass that he stole, but rather can pay the monetary value. All that is one version of their statement. But now another version that comes to the opposite conclusion. According to this, they are asking the opposite. Before they said, how do we know that a change does make an acquisition? Here they're saying, how do we know that a change in an item does not mean that it gets acquired by the thief? Pasuk says, No, you have to return the item. I mean, return the item means no matter what. I mean, unless it's not in existence anymore, right? If he stole some bread and ate it, okay, he can't return that anymore. But as long as it's in existence, even if now it was plywood, now it's a form of a dresser, you still have to return it no matter what. So you see that a change does not make an acquisition. Then we ask, Vaketi Basher Gazal, Haumi Baile Agezo Shelo Mosif Chomesh, Ven Mosif Chomesh Algezel Aviv. So what about the extra words? Asher Gazal. Oh, we need that for the other Derasha, that one pays an extra fifth only if he is the one that stole it and lied and swore falsely about it. But one does not pay a fifth if his father stole something and then the son lied and swore falsely about it. He does not pay a fifth. So we already used Asher Gazal for something else. And so we have come to the opposite conclusion. Both agree that a son does not swear. But the second version says that Shinui does not make an acquisition. And the thief would have to return the item even if there was a change in it. Amar Ula, minayin deyeush she'eno koneh. So Ula says, Yeush, despair, does not make an acquisition. How do you know? She'en e'emar, ve'hebetem gazul et piseach ve'tachole. Pasuk in Malachi, Malachi is castigating the people for bringing inferior animals. These scrawny, horrible animals, they're bringing them as a korban. I guess they don't want to eat them anyway, so this is like a cheap sacrifice, but it's not proper, it's not respectful, right? He says, would you offer this even to your governor, to a human governor, as a gift? The person, the receiver, would say, what kind of terrible gift is this? All the more so, you shouldn't sacrifice it to God. Okay, so now look how it's comparing Gazul and Piseach. Gazul dumia de Piseach. Ma Piseach de leta takanta kelal. Af Gazul de leta takanta. La shena lifnei yeush ve la shena achar yeush. Since it has all these things in the list together, it must be that they're similar. So just like a lame animal has no rectification, once it's lame, it's not going to get better, it's just going to stay lame. So too, when it says Gazul, it must be once an animal is stolen, there's no rectification, there's no way to take a stolen animal and in any way, at any point, make it sacrificable. And therefore, we learn that there's no difference whether one sacrifices it before the owner's despair, in which case, for sure, it's stolen, it's not yours, how could you sacrifice it? And it doesn't help even after the owner despairs, still, you cannot sacrifice it. So you see that despair doesn't affect any change. It doesn't make it belong to the thief anymore after than it did before the Yeush. So you see that Yeush is not koneh. Challenge, Rava adds another source. Rava amar mehacha, korbano velo gaz hagazul, emat ilema lifnei yeush peshita lamali keram. Rava says we can learn that yeush does not effectuate a change in ownership from the word korbano in the beginning of Vayikra, min habakar korbano, if you're going to bring your sacrifice from cattle. So it says korbano means you have to own it and not stolen. Stolen animal cannot be used as a sacrifice. That's the midrash. That's the braita. Now, when is it talking about that? That's so. If it means before the original owner, the rightful owner, had despaired of it, then obviously it doesn't belong to the thief. There's no way just because you stole something, it doesn't make it yours. So that would be obvious. You wouldn't need a derasha for that. Rather, the Braita must be talking, assuming a case of after Yeush and saying and teaching, even when even after the owner despairs, the thief still cannot bring it as a sacrifice. Why? Because evidently the despair does not make an acquisition. The thief still doesn't belong to him. I can't bring a sacrifice of an animal. I can't make a hekdesh. I can't consecrate an animal that's not mine, and I can't offer as a sacrifice to fulfill my vow from something that is not mine. It won't fulfill the other guy's vow either, because I'm bringing it and it's stolen. Hold on. Rava, a daf earlier, said that he himself rejected this proof and said, there's no proof from here, because you were assuming the whole time that the thief stole an unconsecrated animal and then tried to consecrate it, and he can't do that because Yeush is no good. So even after Yeush, he can't consecrate it because it's not his. That was the basis of the proof. But there's no reason to think that he stole an unconsecrated animal. It could equally be talking about that he stole a consecrated animal. And that's why he cannot offer it as a sacrifice. And Yeush doesn't matter, because the owner could despair of finding it, but that doesn't matter because it actually doesn't belong to the human owner. That owner, that guy, made it Hekdesh, and now it belongs to heaven. So even if he makes Yeush, it still belongs to heaven, not to me, the thief, and therefore there's no way that I can now make it Hekdesh from on my behalf, or sacrifice it on my behalf, or for his on his behalf, because now it's also stolen. And so it's talking about something that is acquired afterwards. And so you see, Rava rejected this. So why are you bringing this in the name of Rava, as if he agrees that Yeush does not make a kinyan, where when he rejected this very proof? And it's two answers. Iba et ema hadar be, either Rava changed his mind, right? He once thought that, now he changed his mind. Vibet ema had minayu rapapa amara, or one of these statements is actually the opinion of Rav Papa. Sometimes a student, Rav Papa is a student of Rava, and sometimes a student would say something in the name of his teacher without necessarily indicating that he was saying it. And so it might be recorded in the teacher's name, even though it's actually the student that said it. And so one of these is the authored by Rava himself, and one of these is authored by a student, because a student would often say things in the name of his teacher without indicating the attribution. That brings us to the next quote from the Mishnah. It says, "Umidat tashlumar ba'ava chamisha." The Mishnah taught that the payment of four or five applies only to a shod and a seh. And of course, the pasuk shemar ki gnov e shod or seh utbacho or mecharo does not apply to other animals. If someone steals a different animal or a bird or a deer and slaughters it or sells it, well, one has to pay double, like stealing other items, but not the four or five. So we're going to question this. Ve'amai nelef shor shor mi shabbat mala lan chaya ve'of kayose bahen afkan chaya ve'of kayose bahen. Why don't we learn a gezerah shava of the word shor that says in the Ten Commandments regarding Hilchot Shabbat that you cannot work your ox or your donkey or all of your animals. So shor there is just an example, but the law of Shabbat applies to all animals, and so too shor regarding the theft and slaughter should apply also to all animals. And just like regarding Shabbat, it applies to also wild animals like a deer and bird. So too here, if someone steals a deer or a bird, then one should have to pay four or five. How much? Four or five? Well, maybe it'll depend on if it's more like a sheep or an ox. For a sheep, one pays four because the thief has to go through the trouble of carrying this little poor little sheep. And, oh, well, poor thief that has to go, he has to have the extra energy of carrying it. So we give him a break and he only pays four. So if it's some kind of bird that, some kind of animal that you'd carry, it would be more like a sheep. And if not, it would be more like an ox. And for an ox, you'd pay five. So why don't we say that, and the law would apply to all birds and animals. Amar Rava, amar kera shor v'seh shene pa'amim, shor v'seh in midi acharina la. Rava says, because it says the word shor and seh twice, and so that means specifically shor and seh only, and not anything else. Let's look at the pesukim inside to see. Ki gnov ish shor o seh, so that's in the setup of the case. It mentions already shor o seh, utbacho mecharon, either slaughters it or sells it. Then, chamisha bakar yishalem tachat hashor. He has to pay five bakar, means big animals, cattle, instead of four, the shor. And he has to pay four son, a general category of small animals, tachat haseh, because of the seh. So you see it says shor twice, and it says seh twice. Interestingly, it's in... it says short and then say here, and then also here says you're short and then say. Okay, since it says it twice, that's why I know that it means these animals and these animals only. Amre he miyata. Now we ask a question on Rava. Which set is extra. I know it says it twice, and obviously we need one of them, one short and one sad, to teach me that it applies to those animals. But which ones are the extra ones? The first set or the one at the end of the pasuk? So let's say that the ones at the end are superfluous. I need the ones at the beginning to tell me what I'm stealing, and the ones at the end I wouldn't need. So how else could we frame the pasuk, and that would still make sense? And then leave out tachat shor. Just say tachtav. Varbaason tachtav, and just say, and you pay four tachtav instead of, and don't write the se. So if you say the pasuk, the beginning is the same. A person steals and knocks over a sheep and slaughters it or sells it, so he'll pay five big animals. That's it. You will for it, and four small animals for it. But don't mention shor or se. So could it write that? Would that make sense? No. If you wrote it that way, then I would have thought that one has to pay nine animals, even for stealing one animal. If I steal one ox or one sheep, then I have to pay back nine animals, five ox and four sheep, because it doesn't say tachat what. So you need the tachat ha-shor to tell me, oh, the bakar is for the shor, and I need tachat ha-seh to know that the son is for the seh to break it up. Now, v'chitem aha ketib tachtav, tachtav, ha-tachtav mi-atar. Wait a second, I could figure that anyway, because it says the word tachtav twice. Once I need just to tell me that I'm paying this for that, but the second one is between, right? If I was paying nine, it would say, b'chamisha bakar yeshalem v'arba son tachtav. But the tachtav here says, oh, there's two separate categories, so that's how I would know. But we reject that because we need the extra tachtav for a different reason. The Braita says, I might have thought that if I steal a big expensive ox worth 100 dinar, that I then I have to pay back five for an ox. I have to pay back five. Maybe I can pay back with five small, scrawny oxen. Therefore, the pasuk says, tachtav, I have to pay in parallel for the thing that I stole. So if I stole a nice, big, expensive ox, I have to pay back the same quality. Therefore, I need the word tachtav to teach me that derasha, and I don't have an extra tachtav. And without the extra tachtav, then that would indicate, if you skip the short and say in the second part of the pasuk, then that would seem to mean that I have to pay back nine animals for one theft. So it can't be that the second ones are the extra. Ela shod vese deresha meyuta denichtov lachamana ki ignov ish utvacho umecharo chamisha bakar yeshalem tachat hashor arba ason tachat hase. Rather, it's the first two instances, the first instance of shod and the first of se, that's the extra one, because the pasuk could have written, if a person should steal, right, and not say what he's stealing, because I know what he's going to steal from the end of it, and he slaughters it or sells it, then he has to pay five cattle for the ox and four sheep for the sheep. And then I would know that this applies to shor and se. We're doing all this because we need to show that the first two short and se are extra, right? I could read it perfectly fine without that short and se, and then I would make a gezerah shavah short to Shabbat and apply to all animals. But it doesn't say it this way, but it says it with an extra short and se. That means it applies to these animals only. So does this work syntactically? And I would get to all the right conclusions. And the answer is no. Ikatav rachamanachi hava mina ad deganev tereh v'tabach lehu. And then I would, if it was written that way, I would think that I have to steal two animals, an ox and a sheep, in order to ever have to pay four and five, because doesn't say what I stole. But I said, that doesn't work. Utvacho ketiv lehad. No, but the word slaughter it is singular, only one victim. So that means it would be sufficient if I slaughter one animal. That means it's sufficient if I steal one animal, right? No. No. So maybe it means that I have to steal both an ox and a sheep and sell them both. But that also wouldn't make sense, because it's mecharo ketiv lechad. Mecharo also is in singular. So it couldn't be that I have to steal two animals. Okay, ve'ema hava amina ade ganev tereh v'tabachad mezaben had. Wait, if I wrote the pasuk without shortens in the beginning, I would come to the wrong conclusion that I'm only liable to pay 4 and 5 if I steal two animals and slaughter one of them and sell one of them. And then we reject that. O mechado ketiv. It says o tevacho o mechado, meaning one or the other. It doesn't say that I have to do both of these actions, one each to two different animals. So that we reject that. But we ask again. Vakata havamina ade ganev tarvaihu v'tavachad umeshayer had o mezaben had umeshayer had. I still might have thought, without the short and set in the beginning, that it means I have to steal both a short and a seh, and I have to slaughter one and leave the other one alive, or sell one and leave the other one in my possession. Because since at the end of the pasuk it says talks about punishment for the short and for the seh, I might have thought that it means that I steal both of them, and then the O of Tavach O Machad means that I just slaughtered one of them or sold one of them, and then I would have to pay 4 and 5 for both. That's how I would read it. So you know what? That reading actually does not make sense because it gets to the wrong conclusion. And therefore, if I leave out either the short and say at the end of the pasuk, it doesn't work. If I leave out the short and say at the beginning of the pasuk, also is not readable properly. So which ones are the extra ones? Final conclusion, Ela short de sefa vese deresha miyatad. Rather, the short and the end of the pasuk, you could take out, and say at the beginning of the pasuk you could take out, and then it would read like this: if someone steals an ox, and so right now I know it definitely applies to an ox, as at least one example, and he slaughters it or sells it, hamisha bakar yeshalem tachtav varbaason tachat haseh, then he has to pay five times of cattle for it, tachtav, and then the pronoun here is referring to the shod, because that's what we talked about before. So then I would know all the things I need to know for ox, and then it could add, oh, and by the way, arba'ason tachataseh, if you did that, any of those things, for a seh, then that would only be 4, meaning if you stole a seh and slaughtered it and or sold it, then that would be 4. And then I would know everything, right? So shor de sefa veseh de resha lamali. Why do I need the added mention of shor in the end of the pasuk and seh at the beginning of the pasuk? This pasuk, without those words, reads perfectly fine and comes to all good conclusions. Shema mina shor veseh in midi acharina la. And so now we can validate our original hypothesis that short and seh, one of the instances of each, are extra. And they're here to tell me that this law of paying 4 and 5 applies only to a short and a seh, but no other animals. And we do not learn a gezerah shavah from Shabbat. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen v'amen.